Hare Krishna. So we're continuing the story of amazing Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada was in Butler, and we described last time what he did there. Then he moved to New York. He had gotten a letter of introduction in Bombay from one man to a Dr. Ramamurti Mishra, who was a yoga teacher in New York. Prabhupada telephoned him and introduced himself, and Dr. Mishra invited Prabhupada to come and stay with him. And then Prabhupada took a bus from Butler, went to Philadelphia to the University of Pennsylvania, where he met Dr. Norman Brown. He was the most famous American Sanskritist. And Prabhupada gave lecture to his classes. We mentioned how Prabhupada's books were already there in the library, in the University of Library. And then Prabhupada went on to New York, and he was met at the bus station by one of Dr. Mishra's students, who took Prabhupada right away to the Indian High Commission, where they were having a program. Ravi Shankar was there and other luminaries. And Prabhupada met them all. And then Prabhupada was staying with Dr. Mishra on the Riverside Drive. Forget the number. Very swanky place. Had a doorman. You know, if your building has a doorman, then it's New York. It means it's high class. And Dr. Mishra was teaching yoga. He was a very flamboyant man. Had wavy, long wavy hair, which he had kept oiled very nicely. And you know, everything he spoke was love and beautiful. Anything you'd say, he'd say, "Oh, that's beautiful, that's beautiful." He was that type of person. But he was a follower of Sankaracharya. He was Pakka Mayavadi. And he would have arguments with Prabhupada. I mean, he would say, you know, offensive things. That Krishna is an illusion. Any manifestation of God is illusion, temporary. would not accept that the qualities of God, the name, the fame, the form, the abode, everything is eternal. No, he said everything is temporary. Prabhupada would ask him to help me spread. Your Heidelberg boys came to see me. Not Heidelberg, Leipzig. You please help me spread Lord Chaitanya's movement. So Dr. Mishu would say, well, I consider you an incarnation of Lord Chaitanya, so you don't need any help. It's very difficult to talk to people like that. So then Prabhupada would say, well, your name is Mishra. You have the same name as Lord Chaitanya's father. So therefore, you should take care of me. Help me. So, in this way, they would argue. And Prabhupada would attend. He would have meetings with his students. People would come, well-to-do people, and then some young people would come also to yoga. And Prabhupada would single them out afterwards, speak with them privately. And and then Prabhupada was cooking. Dr. Mishra was in very poor health, and he couldn't cook for himself. So Prabhupada did cooking, very nice, and Dr. Mishra very much appreciated the prasadam and got healthy and attributed it all to Prabhupada. So he was beholden to Srila Prabhupada. But it became a little inconvenient for Prabhupada to stay there. So Dr. Mishra had a yoga studio on West 72nd Street near Central Park. So he moved Prabhupada to that place. And but it was not very comfortable. It was basically an office, and there was a small room. Prabhupada stayed in that small room. There was no window, very small. And but Prabhupada had more freedom. Prabhupada was writing Srimad Bhagavatam, translating, commentating. He had a typewriter which he brought from India. Prabhupada brought a typewriter with him. So he was doing his work every day. And people would come to see him there. And Prabhupada was selling his books. He had his books in all the bookshops, the Eastern-oriented bookshops. So he was getting some income. And then eventually Prabhupada got his own place in that building. He rented a small office. But it was a very odd shape, very, very long and very narrow. The room was only about 6 feet wide and about 15 or 20 feet long. Prabhupada would sit there, and sometimes people would come and they would sit right face to face to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was giving classes on Bhagavad Gita Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. The captain of the ship of the Jaladuta, Arun Pandya, he used to come. And then some young students from Dr. Mishra's would come. And Prabhupada would preach to them. And then one boy would come, and then he would tell his friends about the Swami, and then his friends would come. They would come from downtown, from the Lower East Side. The Lower East Side was becoming a cultural magnet for young people, artists, musicians, and so they started coming, and preaching, you can imagine how difficult it was to preach. Prabhupada would sometimes ask them, "Do you know who is Krishna? Have you ever seen a picture of Krishna?" And the people just stared at Prabhupada. They had never even seen a picture of Krishna. They didn't know anything about Krishna. And Prabhupada would come to teach Krishna Bhakti. How do you teach Krishna Bhakti to someone who doesn't even, never even heard of Krishna, doesn't know anything? Or even worse, there were people who knew something of Krishna, like myself. I knew Krishna. And when I first met Prabhupada, the first thing I told him, "I know Bhagavad Gita. I'm not like these other boys. They don't know anything. I know Bhagavad Gita." Because I had studied, I took a course at NYU in Bhagavad Gita. I did my paper on Bhagavad Gita. But of course, I thought my professor taught me that Bhagavad Gita was written by unknown forest sages. Unknown forest sages. So Prabhupada said, "Oh, you know Bhagavad Gita?" Yeah, because I was reading Aurobindo Bhagavad Gita, big thick book, So he said, oh, you know Bhagavad Gita. So he said, next time you come, bring that Bhagavad Gita. So I said, all right. So that was my first assignment. So the next time I came, I brought that Bhagavad Gita. And Prabhupada said, all right, now open it to any place and read to me out loud the one page. So I opened it, and then I read, and then Prabhupada said, all right, now close the book. Now tell me, what have you just read? And I looked at Prabhupada, I couldn't say anything. He says, well, why you can't say anything? He said, and I said, well, actually, Prabhupada, Swamiji, I didn't understand anything that's in what I just read. And Prabhupada said, just see? And Prabhupada said, yes, he is written in such a way that nobody can understand. And because they cannot understand, they think, oh, it's very, very profound, very spiritual. Because they think spiritual means not understandable. So anything you don't understand, that is spiritual. Yeah. And my professor taught me, by the way, I brought Prabhupada to meet that professor at NYU. Prabhupada, his name was Robert Perry. And Prabhupada gave a talk to his class. And Professor Perry came to see Prabhupada. 26, and Prabhupada made prasadam for him. So my professor taught me that Krishna was a literary figure. He's like Hamlet. Shakespeare wrote Hamlet, and it's the whole history of the. He was the Prince of Denmark or something. But there was no ever any real Hamlet. He was just a character that the author created. So I thought that that's what Krishna is in Bhagavad Gita, that these unknown forest sages, they created this character called Krishna. And Krishna speaks this philosophy. So those of us who had some idea of Krishna, it was totally bogus. Actually, Prabhupada said it's better that you don't know anything about Krishna than you know some wrong thing about Krishna. It's easier to teach someone who doesn't know anything than someone who knows the wrong thing. You know, he used the example of there was a musical piano teacher, very famous, and students would come to take lessons from him, and he would ask them, do you know how to play the piano? So those who said yes, you know, they had some experience, he said he would charge them very high rate. And those who said, no, I don't know anything about piano, he would charge a very low rate. And the reason for this is because, you know, he was asked, why do you do this? He said, because I have to work harder with those who know something about piano, because I have to make them unlearn everything they know and then begin to teach them. So Prabhupada was there at West 72nd Street. And then one day someone broke in. He had a door to his office, and there was a transom. They call it a transom. And someone broke that open and climbed in and stole the tape recorder and the typewriter. Prabhupada had purchased the tape recorder. It's in his diary. That's the first thing he purchased. Major purchase. He spent equivalent of 1 month's rent on the tape recorder. He saw an advertisement in the New York Times, went to the shop, and he recorded, the first thing Prabhupada recorded, he had written the introduction to Bhagavad Gita, which he called Gita-Upanishad. And Prabhupada recorded that. We have that recording. That was in February 1966. And then Prabhupada would have what he called tape record Sankirtan. Tape record Sankirtan means when Hare Krishna. When no one would come to Prabhupada's meetings in his room, he would be all alone, he would set up the tape recorder and have kirtan and give class to the tape recorder. Because Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had once said that if you are alone, you can still preach because the walls will hear you. So Prabhupada would record himself. And then after recording, then he would play it and hear. So he was doing Shravanam Kirtanam. Even at 22nd Avenue, when Prabhupada would have classes, the most important thing was to record. Prabhupada had every class recorded. Someone had given very big tape recorder from a recording studio. It was very heavy. I was the only one who could lift it. I would carry it down from Prabhupada's apartment into the storefront, make the recording, then I'd bring it back up. And they say after the class, Prabhupada would go back up to his apartment, and then we would all follow. And what did Prabhupada do? He would play the recording of the class he had just given. And he would listen very intently to himself. And he would listen so intently as if he was listening to someone else speaking, not himself. He wasn't listening, oh, how nicely I speak. But very intently. As if he was learning something new. So he would listen very intently. So we would listen very intently. And we had just heard the lecture in the storefront. Now again we're hearing the same lecture. But we would listen very intently. Prabhupada was teaching us how to hear. So, and anyway, so when the things were stolen, then Prabhupada felt very vulnerable. He thought it would happen again, and he thought the superintendent of the building did the theft. So there was no protection. So he wanted to leave there. So these young students, boys who were coming, they suggested Prabhupada move downtown where they were living. And one of them arranged for Prabhupada to stay in a loft. He had a loft on the Bowery. Now, a loft is very large area. They were actually built in the 19th century as factories. And they're about 25 feet wide and 100 feet long. Huge. And Prabhupada would share the loft with one boy, David. And of course, the Bowery is also known as Skid Row. Skid Row means the lowest. You know, Bowery comes, what's the word for farm in Dutch? Boerderij. So Bowery comes from that word. You know, New York used to be New Amsterdam. So it was a Dutch colony. So, but that is this area of the Bowery became. I mean, you just can't imagine how dirty and poor, all the broken people would go there and just drink this cheap alcohol. And it was just hundreds of these drunks vomiting. And they would stay. They had these cheap hotels. For 25 cents they could stay. But only at night. During the day they had to leave. So they just sat around on the street. Drunk. This was before there were drugs. There were no drugs. Everything was alcohol. Cheapest alcohol. And people would die right on the street. You can't imagine that. And that's where Prabhupada was staying. And the young people who were coming to see him there, they remarked that, like when Mukunda, he first came, he was a musician, that Prabhupada was so cultured, so aristocratic, and he's living in the lowest, the poorest place. When he was up at Riverside Drive, oh, it was very posh. Now he's living very low. But actually Prabhupada was happier there on the Bowery because he had his own place, big place. People were coming. He was teaching Sanskrit. He was teaching cooking. He would cook for them, and then some people would ask, oh, teach me how to make this flat bread. You call it a chapati or something. Teach me how to do that. Prabhupada said, yeah, pay me $100, I'll teach you. So in this way, and then they would bring instruments. Someone brought a harmonium. Of course, they were musicians, so the kirtans were kind of unusual. Because they were musicians, they would like to do their own kind of music. They didn't follow exactly, you know, the way we do. At 26 Second Avenue, Prabhupada, he allowed anyone could bring any instrument in the kirtan. People would bring saxophone, flute, drums, and one person once he dragged in, Prabhupada allowed it, so we accepted. Someone he dragged in he found a piano, a grand piano on the street. Someone's discarding it. So he dragged it in, took off the cover, and then took a hammer and was beating on the metal strings. And Prabhupada allowed it. The main thing was chant Hare Krishna. In whatever way you want to do it, whatever condition, just chant. So, that's how Prabhupada was spreading his movement. Of course, Prabhupada was trying to get support He would look at buildings, big buildings. We once went together, we walked on Houston Street, there's a bank. Big bank, but very luxurious. It was built like a Greek temple, made of marble with big columns. And I mean, that building was $100,000. Prabhupada had nothing. And Prabhupada was very serious. Oh, yeah, we get this. It's already a temple. Everything was marble, carved very nicely, very ornate. And down below, they had the vault, big vault. The door of the vault was round, and it was like 3 feet thick, steel. Stainless steel. And Prabhupada said the brahmacharis can stay in the vault. And then upstairs on the main floor there were some offices. Prabhupada said, I'll stay here. And Prabhupada was trying to get support from India, from his godbrothers. He was writing letters, and they say, no, it's not possible to help you. Then he a big industrialist, this one, Singhania, Prabhupada was writing to him. He agreed to send money, but then you had to get the foreign exchange permission. Prabhupada thought he could get it because the Prime Minister had to approve. And the Prime Minister, Prabhupada knew the Prime Minister, Lal Shastri. You know, there's that photo of Prabhupada meeting him, giving him Bhagavatams. But then he died very suddenly. When he was visiting the Soviet Union. So that was a big setback. And then Indira Gandhi became Prabhupada wrote her. Her secretary replied that it's not possible. You should get support from Americans. Prabhupada once went to a dance recital, Bharat Natyam dance, at the India Center, India House. He wrote a letter to Samarthi Maharaj. He said, I have not seen a dance recital for the last 40 years, but I have gone today to see this dance recital. Why did Prabhupada go? He said, I wanted to see how Americans receive Indian culture. And they received it very nicely, and Prabhupada was hopeful that his movement would be successful. Because Americans, they appreciated Indian culture. So Prabhupada was on the Bowery, but living with this boy became a little... this boy was... At first he was enthusiastic, and Prabhupada had big hopes for him. Prabhupada wanted to bring him to Vrindavan. And Prabhupada was thinking to have deity worship on the Bowery. Can you imagine? To get deities from Jaipur. But then this boy, he would do things. He would leave the soap on the floor of the shower. And Prabhupada told him, don't do this. This is very dangerous. But still he did it. Prabhupada would, you know, see all the details. And from the detail, he would make a conclusion that you're crazy. Who leaves the soap on the floor of the shower? And then sure enough, the boy started taking intoxication, and one day he just became mad from the drugs, became violent, and was shouting at Prabhupada. Prabhupada just left. And he went to some other boys that were coming to see him. Young men, there was Carl Jurgens and Mukunda, Michael Grant. So then Prabhupada had to stay with them, but of course that was not very convenient. Because they had wives, and the wives didn't like Prabhupada. Because Prabhupada would say, you know, no illicit sex. No intoxication, no meat eating. So then Mukunda then, he went to the newspaper and found this place for rent, 26 Second Avenue. It was a store, shop, and then apartment in the rear building. And the rent came to $200 a month for both. And the landlord, the owner, Prabhupada, made him a member. He'd become a member of my society. He paid $20 a month. And the man agreed. So that reduced the rent by $20. And Prabhupada gave him a set of Bhagavatams. So, Prabhupada once asked me, we were in Bombay, this is before the temple was built, Prabhupada was in one of the apartments there, one of the flats, Mr. Charya's. He was a pilot for Air India. And he would be gone, you know, on his flights. So Prabhupada was staying there. One day I was sitting with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada asked me, how did you join? And I was very surprised. You know, why would Prabhupada be interested to know how I joined? But Prabhupada was very interested. He wanted to know all the details, how I joined. So I told Prabhupada that I was living very near to where 26 Second Avenue was. I had moved from the Bronx to the Lower East Side. I was on 6th Street, Avenue D. Because I had to take some courses at NYU, Washington Square, to finish up to get my degree. And my former roommate, he had gone to 26th Second Avenue and attended a kirtan, and then came and told me. And we were very interested in Indian culture and spiritual culture. Because I had, in 1964, when I was a student, my father wanted me to see the world, and he got me a job on a ship, on a freighter. And we happened, this freighter was a tramp freighter. It would go anywhere where there was cargo, and it happened to go to India. So that trip to India was very, it had a very profound effect upon me. And when I came back, I had bought Indian clothes, a lungi and sandals, and you know, I would go to Indian restaurants. I became obsessed with India. I don't know why. I went to Ali Akbar Khan concerts. I did all my papers in history. I did on Gandhi. In literature, I did Tagore. Anything Indian, I became. And then eventually, I read Bhagavad Gita, and I was going to Ramakrishna Society to Nikalananda, Swami Nikalananda. Prabhupada had met him. He's the one who told Prabhupada that, you know, you have to eat meat and eat American food and dress American style. He would dress in a suit and had these very fancy shoes, leather shoes, wingtip. And then he would put a saffron robe over that. He said, you have to eat with knife and fork. Prabhupada had never eaten with knife and fork. You know, knife and fork means meat eating. You don't need knife and fork for vegetarian. Prabhupada said, I haven't come here to learn knife and fork. I've come here to get them to leave knife and fork. But I was going to this Swami Nikalananda, and he was teaching Ramakrishna philosophy. You know, their philosophy is Daridra Narayan. Prabhupada spoke a lot about Daridra Narayan. Nowadays, in this con, we don't talk about Daridra Narayan. Daridra Narayan is similar to Gandhi philosophy of a Harijan. Daridra Narayan, of course, means God, and Daridra means the poor man, helpless man. That the poor man is God. So you should serve the poor man. And you open hospitals, and you feed them, and clothe them, and do it. And this is your religion. Anyway, now in ISKCON, someone is talking about Dharidra Narayan. So, so I became, you know, this was the only thing. I thought this was very spiritual. And so I asked Swami Nikalananda, I want to become your student. And just learn from you. He said, okay. He said, but I'm going now on summer vacation. He was going up to Canada, to the St. Lawrence River, some island. They had an island there. So I'm going up there, and this was in July or so. And he said, when I come back in September, then you can join me. He used to offer me breakfast, scrambled eggs. But I had become a vegetarian, so I'm sorry, I can't eat your scrambled eggs. They would eat everything. Turkey, he liked turkey. You know, Prabhupada called the Ramakrishna Mission. You know what he called Ramakrishna Mission? Murgi Mission. In Bengali, Murgi means chicken. Because they very much like chicken. They wouldn't eat beef, but they ate chicken. And this Vivekananda, he would teach, you know, in every household in India, they were, they had tulsi, they were growing tulsi. So he said, stop growing tulsi and grow eggplants. He said, this is how we'll solve the food problem. Everyone grow brinjal and no tulsi. So he went to Canada, and then that's when my friend told me about Prabhupada. He told me Allen Ginsberg was there. They have singing and dancing. What is this, singing and dancing? How is that spiritual? How is that yoga? And he said, and the Swami has a big tape recorder. And he said, you know, that's material. How can a Swami have a tape recorder? So then, so I went to the very next meeting, to the storefront. It was August, first week of August, very hot. I was sitting all the way in the rear by the door. Prabhupada came in through a side door, and he wasn't wearing any kurta, just a top cloth, and his body was shiny from the perspiration, and golden colored the robes. And he opened the door. He went to sit down, but for some reason he stopped. He turned and he looked right at me. And I have like a photograph. in my mind of Prabhupada looking at me. Many devotees have this experience, Prabhupada looking at them. How intense and perceptive. And then I joined. And when I told Prabhupada this story, he said, "Oh, same with me." And then Prabhupada, he says, then Prabhupada told me his story, how he joined Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, how his friend brought him. And his friend didn't join the way he Prabhupada did. And also my friend, he didn't join Prabhupada. So any questions?
Thank you very much, Brahmananda Prabhu, for such a nice remembrances. The question is regarding your particular experience among so many that you have in this subject, which is every living entity has a particular identity, previous sanskaras, and many, if not all, Prabhupada's disciples have a different particular view of Prabhupada on the very beginning and also at the end. And this is due to their particular relationship. You were so intimate, we can say, in the sense that Prabhupada gave all free access, so intimate, that in due course of time, the society grew. His mode of approach was more like in the Aishwarya kind of also, due to the circumstances. But I can sense that in your relationship, that practically never existed. But in due course of time, you had to accommodate that particular, I will say, aspect of relating to Prabhupada. We know that many disciples couldn't handle in many ways, and they withdrew from the society, keeping with them that original intimate relationship, we'll say, in the way that they saw their Swamiji. Could you please elaborate at least a bit on how that affected you in the sense of having to deal with your most intimate relationship with Prabhupada and simultaneously seeing growing in, or not growing, but adapting this other mood of, guru, being heavy and also with what, according to the Shastras, is required to observe kindly. Thank you.
Well, circumstances change, the relationship changes, but the relationship is still there. I mean, like you have a child with your parents, your childhood is one thing, and then when you grow up, it's another thing, but it's the same relationship. It's still your father and your mother. In the spiritual, we know there are different rasas, different relations, but the relationship of loving Krishna, that's still there, although there are different aspects. Mother Jasoda is completely satisfied taking care of Krishna, and the gopis, they're completely satisfied dancing with Krishna. So everyone is satisfied. So you know, in the very beginning, I mean, Prabhupada literally had nothing. So I was able to provide Prabhupada. I gave him things. I gave him a typewriter that he used to type Bhagavad Gita. I gave him a desk lamp. Prabhupada didn't even have a desk lamp. I gave Prabhupada a pen set. Prabhupada very much liked to use a pen. He would sign his letters and and I had it engraved. His name. It was a marble thing with two pens for his desk. I gave Prabhupada a globe. And I put on these little flags. I selected blue for Krishna wherever we had a center. And Prabhupada could spin the globe and see all the... But then later on, then we did so many other things. When Prabhupada came here to Vrindavan to open, Gur Das invited Prabhupada to come open the temple. When Prabhupada came here, there was nothing. There was no temple. It was a construction site. Gur Das couldn't get cement or steel because these things were under license. You had to get a government license to buy. So Prabhupada would send me to Mathura every day, myself and one man named Pranab. He spoke Hindi. We used to go every day to Mathura to see the government officers. This one, that one, had to go to this table, that table. And every day we had to come back and then report to Prabhupada, and then Prabhupada would make a strategy, what to say, how to do. So that was a different service. And then eventually we got the steel and the cement. So I don't know if I answer your question, but the relationship is there. It changes because of the circumstances change.
In my humble perception also, I kind of see that even you love Prabhupada as God, knowing that he also is the servant of God.
Huh?
In my humble perception, I came to know by visiting you that you love Prabhupada as God, although you know that he is the servant of God.
No, he's as good as God. Once upon a time, I said Prabhupada is God. That was a big mistake. Because I didn't know. I should have said, he's as good as God. Then I would have been all right. But now I say he's better than God. Because God didn't come to the Lower East Side and save me. Prabhupada did. So Prabhupada's very merciful. He just gives us opportunity to render service. That's all. It just comes down to that. And Prabhupada was unlimited in his desire to spread Krishna consciousness. So there was he provided unlimited services to do. There is no limitation. Prabhupada provided unlimited books to read. He says, I've given you more books than you can read in a lifetime. So, it's unlimited. You have a question? Huh? Yeah. So the question is, Prabhupada went with only 40 rupees. How did he get money to buy tape recorder and so many things? So the thing is that Prabhupada, when he left Calcutta port, he had only 40 rupees. But when he arrived in New York, he had 40 rupees plus $20. And $20 is a lot of money. Figure 10 times, so it's like $200. If you understand the economy, at that time, gasoline, petrol was 25 cents a gallon. Can you imagine? That's why when one of the boys came to Prabhupada and asked him for $5, why do you want $5? He says, oh, I want to buy gasoline and pour it on myself and light. So Prabhupada called me, he said, nah, this boy, he has to go back home. And later Prabhupada said he was crazy, not because he wanted to pour gasoline, but because he asked for $5. Because gasoline is only 25 cents a gallon. So $5 would have bought, you know, 20, you don't need 20 gallons. You only need 1-2 gallons, boss. If he asked for 50 cents, oh, then he's sane. But $5? No, Prabhupada sold a set of the books to Captain Pandya. He gave Prabhupada a $20 bill. Prabhupada, he charged for his book $16.80 because he had printed in the books 16 rupees, 80 paise. He was selling them in Delhi for 16 rupees, 80 paise. So in America, $16, which is a lot of money. So Prabhupada was selling his books. That's how. Prabhupada went to all the bookstores. Because I know, later on when we published Macmillan Gita and Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, I went to the bookshops and they remembered Prabhupada. Because Prabhupada would come, one lady, she said, yeah, I know this man. Yeah, he came, he gave me this triangle-shaped thing with stuffed with vegetable. And it's very nice. Samosa. Prabhupada gave her samosa. So that she took all the books. So So Prabhupada's program always was that you convert books into money. And to do that, you have to preach. Any other question? So the question is about my mother. God bless her. I invited my mother to my initiation, but she had come previously. She wanted to know what her sons were doing, because we were living with Prabhupada. We lived in this store. And we had to share the bathroom with Prabhupada in his apartment. She came to see Prabhupada. So Prabhupada was telling her, you know, I'm taking care of your sons, two sons. I'm feeding them, giving them a place to stay, taking care of them. So maybe you can make some donation. So my mother, you know, she's very intelligent. She said, but I've already donated my sons. So Prabhupada said, yes, all right, thank you. Because she came to get us back. And Prabhupada, once she said, I've donated my sons, Prabhupada said, okay, I accept. Now, it's finished. But she said that you've made my sons crazy. So Prabhupada didn't get a chance to reply because he had to give the class. So he came down, and instead of giving Bhagavad Gita class, he said, I will speak on who is crazy. And Prabhupada gave a lecture. And that we made a book of that. So my mother came to the initiation in Prabhupada's apartment, tiny apartment. And Prabhupada made a fire. This was astonishing, to make a fire in an apartment. And then I came for the beads and the name. Prabhupada once told me why he gave me, you know, Brahmananda. It's kind of an unusual name. It's not a name of Krishna directly. You know, it's not like Krishna Das. And so Prabhupada once told me why he gave me the name Brahmananda. Well, there were several explanations he told. But one was, I don't know if you'd be able to appreciate this, but the president of the Ramakrishna Mission in Calcutta, his name was Swami Brahmananda. And Prabhupada said, I gave you the name Brahmananda because of him. So that's very interesting, because when he gave me the name, that was in the very beginning. I wasn't the later on I became the president. Prabhupada made me the president. So I don't know, Prabhupada was... We were all into Ramakrishna at that time. We were all going there. Hayagriva was going, Kirtananda. We were all reading the books and this and that. Ramakrishna became like a competitor to Lord Chaitanya. They created this philosophy, this mystique. And they were running battles between Gaudiya Math and Ramakrishna Mission. That's part of the history. Anyway, then when Prabhupada gave me the bead, so I bowed down to Prabhupada. My mother, she was sitting on a chair. Prabhupada had a folding chair. Everyone was sitting on the floor, even Prabhupada, but my mother was sitting on a chair. You know, she was above everyone, presiding. So I bowed down to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, "Now bow down to your mother." And then he instructed me, "Whenever you see your mother, you should bow down." I did that for a while. When I would go see her, I'd ring the doorbell. She would open the door and didn't see anyone. There I was on the ground. Some of Prabhupada's instructions are very difficult to follow. So, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai! Srila Prabhupada ki jai! Srila Prabhupada ki jai! Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devam Gauravani Pacharane Nirvishesha Sunyavari Paskacha Dasatara Hare Krishna.